everyone, and welcome to a very happy Sunday Wrap show after a massive win by the Crows over Geelong on Friday night. With me as usual is Macca and Nikki. How are you going, guys?
Yeah, very good. Thanks, Phoenix.
Very nicely.
Yes, lots to talk about tonight, but let's whiz through the results so that we can get to the good stuff, eh? We had on Saturday Essendon getting up over North, 20 goals, 12, 132 to North, 16 goals, 9, 105, a margin of 27 points. The Dons now in the 8.
Yeah, well, you'd expect
boring them to game.
I was going to say, you expect them to beat North Melbourne.
They're playing all right, though, the Bombers, but it's kind of a Bradbury situation, especially with West Coast deciding to come up with different ways of how not to win. The Demons getting up over a pretty lacklustre Port Power. Demons 13-10, 88 to the Power 9-11, 65. A margin of 23 in the end after the Demons dominated the first half. Port still haven't beaten a top eight team.
They Correct. Still have not, no matter what Kane Corns keeps trying to say, and he even put it on the Sunday Footy Show today, that they've beaten one. No, Kane, they haven't.
No, and the interesting thing is that they almost played two games, Port Adelaide, the second half and the first half. There were many, many goals difference in it. But having said that, Melbourne are a tough little team to beat, aren't they?
I actually think there's something we saw in our game that we saw happen to Melbourne in the second half.
Go on, Nikki.
Fading out, being tired after the Darwin. I think that's a lot of what you can only look at as to how tired they got, because they were so hard at it and such high intensity, they couldn't maintain that for four quarters.
You've stolen my thunder, Nicky. I that went up in speed, but you're 100% right.
Sorry, Macca.
No, you're 100% right.
Don't you love it how Macca always says, oh, you stole my line, you stole my thunder? Has he ever come out with an original thought, Macca and Nicky, do you reckon?
You got. I've already posted that on Big Footy, mate. Nikki stole it off of me on Big Footy.
Righto. We had the Bulldogs 16-14-1-1-0 beating a pretty ordinary Gold Coast Suns who were in it for a while and then decided just to go home early. 8-8-56. Dogs by 54, keeping their finals hopes alive.
If anybody watched that, you would die of boredom. That was a shocking game to watch.
I was watching it. I'm just going, what else can I do? Shall I do some cleaning?
Start pulling out some eyelashes or something. Sydney, 14-17-101, continuing their winning way over a disappointing St Kilda, 9 goals, 5.59. Swans up by 42 and now firmly in the top eight.
And if we are a premiership chance, they are our genuine danger.
And rounding off Saturday's games, Hawthorn 15-10-100 over a disappointing Fremantle at home. 7 goals, 6.48. Both teams, I think, just playing out time for the rest of the season, I think.
Yeah, though Clarko, he plays with intent. And he's obviously, he'll be thinking of next year and working his team into that. I don't know what the other guy's doing.
Well, they actually did adhere to a new game plan this week at the start of the game, Fremantle, where they decided that they were the two really big sticks and it's a good idea to kick the ball between them, which they seemed to be avoiding last week. And then they forgot.
Yeah, forgotten how to play. Today we had Richmond, a really good win over GWS Giants, who have forgotten that football's a team sport. Richmond, 9 goals, 10.64 to the Giants, 6 goals, 9.45. On a bit of a wet day at the G, Tigers by 19, and now in the top four.
Yeah, look, they had a good, very good win by the Tigers. They really slogged it out hard. GWS Green didn't help them again. He's going to go for another couple of matches.
Surely they'll try to trade him.
Oh, that's just ridiculous what he did.
He's just
stupid.
He's a banana, isn't he?
Well, discipline whatsoever. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. He thought he'd try and hide it by grabbing the Guernsey and then punching him that. Don't do it when the umpire is standing a meter away looking directly at you, you numbnut.
I don't know what and I'm not being unfair to him, but you almost have to think he's a moron.
He lacks any sort of discipline at all. Must frustrate the hell out of Cameron, and I reckon he's tradable. As good a player as he is, he's tradable.
Yeah, I think what I'm getting at, his actions must disturb the rest of the side.
Well, they all have to keep defending him. Oh, he's a really good bloke. Not if he punches people like that all the time. And to be fair, in the last game, Zorko did an impression of Green.
Yeah, he must have been a bit ridiculous as well.
Really wonder what Zorko was on. I couldn't work out what he's carrying on about. He had a very good half of football, and he went crazy after that.
Yeah, he's got two issues for that one. I mean, there was a jumper punch, and why on earth that punch to the guts before the start of the third quarter wasn't a free kick paid? Well, the umpire's just standing there going, oh, he's hit him, and the guy can't breathe. Okay.
Now, rounding out the day, we had Collingwood 13-15-93 defeating a stupid West Coast. That's the only word you can describe. West Coast losing that game. They're just a bunch of idiots. 13 goals, 7-85, keeping West Coast out of the eight.
It was an incredible game to watch, wasn't it? Because I reckon about halfway, a third of the way through the last quarter, we would have all written Collingwood off. But all of a sudden, West Coast just stopped. And they didn't play it very cleverly either. And Collingwood just kept charging till they hit the front. And West Coast, very poor effort, I thought.
Collingwood kicked the last five goals of that match. I mean, how can that be when West Coast have held sway pretty much the whole match? How could they allow Collingwood to kick the last five goals?
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. And I don't think they played it very smart either. They kept just blind kicking forward, which played into Collingwood's hands. And, a little bit of keeping. They didn't play any keepings off or burning up any time or any of the things that you do with the save games. They just kept on trying to plug it forward and turning it over. And, they lose to Collingwood, and it's just an average team.
Collingwood's midfield is very good, Macca. But I agree that the backs and the forwards are issues for them. But their midfield, you do have to give them, that's a pretty decent midfield.
No, they have a good midfield, but it's all about a team, Nicky.
Yeah, I mean, De Goey got him over the line in the end. He had a huge last quarter and proves his worth there. Anyway, rounding off the games today, we had the Brisbane Lions 17-10-112 holding off Carlton 11-16-82 in the battle for the spoon.
Yeah, interesting thing there, Rockliffe being played as a tagger on Gibbs and did a good job on it too. It was very surprising to see that. As Orko dominated as a player in the first half and thought he was a bit of a boxer in the second half, and he might be up on a couple of charges.
Yeah, he definitely will.
But obviously the game that we all want to know about is the huge win by the Crows on Friday night. A massive game for both teams, but particularly for us, given the history and the time of year. And it was the Crows 13-13-91, holding off Geelong in the end, 10 goals, 10-70, a margin of 21 points after we pretty much held sway for most of the game, up by as much, I think, as 41 points at one stage. How did you guys see it?
Well, I saw it as a breakout game in many ways because, firstly, it's the first time we've beaten Geelong for many years. Secondly, we had the coaching panel come up with a different type of game plan to get around the very things that where Geelong have beaten us in the past. And the other thing that I did really like was the hard edge of our game, the fact that we didn't cross the line, but we played very tough right up to the line. I thought it was sort of a breakout game for us.
It was just the intent we started with, and we just kept at it for the whole night. Was just so pleasing to see. And there was a lovely little unsociable aspect to the way we were playing.
Yeah, that's exactly where I'm coming from, Nicky.
Yeah, intensity for me was the most pleasing thing, particularly in close. We never gave them any time at all around the contest, and we sustained it for the majority of the match. We probably tired a bit towards the end, but the intensity is what I loved.
Yeah, we had, and as Nicky pointed out and stole off what I said, put on Big Footy, about the tiring. We were entitled to get tired in that last quarter, but apart from that, we still kept trying to maintain our intensity. And our midfield, the four boys in there, Sloan, the Crouch brother, two Crouch boys, and Greenwood, gee, they're tough nuts. They just love their games. They all play terrific games.
Oh, it was really interesting hearing Harry Taylor being interviewed this morning, and they asked him about why didn't Joel Selwood start on him. And he mentioned that Blickfuss was also manning him up. But his comment was that you could just see before the ball bounced the look in Rory Sloane's eyes that he was just going to be a beast.
And that's another one of the breakout things I was talking about, because it's been frustrating me, Rory worrying about going to half back or half forward instead of confronting the issues that there. They've got a tagger there. Just keep pushing him away and just keep trying to get the ball. And that's exactly what he did on Friday night, and he did it to perfection. And, Rory, you've done it once now, mate. You can do it every bloody game.
I think we actually surprised Geelong at that very opening bounce with the setup in the midfield, because we've actually not started Rory for the past couple of weeks in the midfield at the start. He's been either off a half back or off half forward. So I think that's why they had Selwood sitting on the bench, that they were going to bring him on as soon as Rory went into the middle. But we put him in the middle, and then we had Cameron in there as well. And you can just see the Geelong players, and Dangerfield's like, I'm standing next to Charlie Cameron.
Like, why?
Well,
that's the other thing I love too. We slammed the shit out of Dangerfield several times, and there's a lovely photograph, I think, in the Sunday Mail. There's about three of them slamming him into the ground at once. We really gave him a bit of a physical workover for once.
I loved the look of disgust on Greenwood's face after he bumped him and he fell down. Just that little backwards look of like, you did what?
That was pathetic.
Well, he tweeted afterwards that Danger was going to get an Oscar for that one. So yeah. He clearly was giving him some grief about it.
what I like.
Their use of their midfield rotations is very interesting. Selwood, Dangerfield and Duncan had 81, 80 and 88% time on ground. You compare that to the two Crouch boys and Sloaney, Matt Crouch 76, Brad Crouch 70, Rory Sloane 81, and then Huey Greenwood 71. Even though they had less rotations than us because of Blickavs and Reece Stanley didn't spend a huge amount of time on ground, they do rely a lot on those three, don't they?
Very much so. In fact, you beat those three or keep those three to moderate games, you beat Geelong.
Yeah, and that's the way it's been all year. Some of the excuses I've heard being trotted out was that Selwood and Hawkins had the flu. Well, if that's the case, why is he on the ground for that long?
Yeah, but when you run out of the ground, you're saying, I'm fit enough to play this game. So that goes out the window, and that was the same with Jenkins. Jenkins had lost 6 kilos sitting on the loo for the previous several days after eating some rotten ham or something. He wouldn't have been feeling 100%, but he's declared himself fit when he goes out on the ground.
Well, it's just stupid by Geelong to put him out there if they're not.
Well, it's no excuse, Nikki. It's up to the team. You're saying the players are fit when you put them out there.
Yeah, I know. I actually loved the use of what we did with Riley Knight, with tagging him, because I think it was only – I saw him a couple of times in the midfield. Most of the time he started off the back half and then would pick him up once.
Yes, we did. Talking about Riley Knight, and as one of the commentators said, you know, he's as tough as a cat's head. I love that little scrap he had with Selwood on the ground. I don't really know what was going on there, but there's a flurry of everything.
Selwood, I gouged him.
Is that what happened?
Yes, he did. And if you freeze one of the frames, you can actually see it, that the hand comes up, and that is why Riley was so angry.
Oh, yeah, he really lost it. I loved
it, though. And he then, once Selwood got the free kick, because why else, he complained and he actually said it. He said to the umpire, like, he got eye gouged, and Tex heard it, and Tex talked to him, and Tex then said something to the ump.
Okay.
At that time. So I wonder, even though there's been absolutely no mention from any media at all about that incident.
Except Crowcast.
Except us. Although now David King has been notified, which I think something might get made of it, is that I think it may actually get looked at. Now, whether something happens about it or whether they want to still protect him is another matter entirely.
Well, if he did eye gouge him, that, to me, that's one of the lowest of the low things to do.
And he's got form. People forget he's got form for doing dog acts like that.
Well, I thought that was Juddy's specialty, but I didn't know that Seward was into that as well.
No, he's done it before. I'm trying to remember the player who he did it against, but he was on the ground, he didn't like it, and that's what he did, was his eye gouged before. So, yep, I hope he's in trouble.
All right, let's go through some head-to-head stats. And we changed the way we played, 346 disposals to 328, but our kick-to-handball ratio was 1.6 to 1, so 214 kicks to 132 handballs showed the way we played. We really used the ball by foot to cut through their zone, and that's shown in the marks as well, 91 to 63 marks. Tackle, 70 to 89, we were so intense at the contest, but that tackle count surprises me, but it just shows that we had the ball a bit more than they did. Hit-outs were fairly even, although I thought Sauce actually did a good job. The frees were even, although they were 27... what were they, 27-10 after quarter time?
Yeah, that'd be right.
Oh, I'm so, that was just ridiculous at the ground. I'm lucky. I hope those guys had a change of clothes that didn't have any AFL referencing on it whatsoever, because they were not making it out of that ground alive.
Yeah, well, yeah. One umpire in particular was a thorough disgrace. And you don't like to say an umpire is cheating, but, gee, you'd have to really think about it. Number 25, just... I'd love to know what the stats were, how many frees he paid to Geelong, how many he, if he paid any to us, and how many he overlooked that should have gone to us. And I'll tell you what,
that's the important one.
Yeah, and how many one-handed throws did Geelong get away with?
Oh, so their goals, their first four goals, one of them I think was okay. The rest all had freeze either directly just before they kick the goal or just a little bit further out that should have been paid to us.
Yeah, that's correct, Nikki. And, you know, I was very, very, very angry about it. And then it just kept coming into my vision all the time, number 25, you dirty rat.
Yeah, I mean, look, we can talk about the umpiring and there was certainly some pretty average decisions. My impression overall was that the game was just over-umpired and that there were far too many soft frees paid and not enough obvious frees paid, such as the incorrect disposal. But let's move on from the umpires. Inside 50s, 48 to 42 shows that the game was played between the two arcs, that not a huge inside 50 count, but we were very good in terms of our inside 50 efficiency, 13 disposals per scoring shot. And 26 disposals per goal. Our contested posies, 154 to 145. Our uncontested posies were even, 186 each, although from memory that evened up in the last quarter. We were up by a fair bit at halftime there. Effective disposals, we ran at just under 70%. They ran at 73.8%. Contested marks, 12 to 16. Marks inside 50, 30 to 11. But here's the big one. Clearances 47 to 27. Just that is the game right there. End of podcast, really.
Yeah, that was a smashing. That was an absolute smashing. That's why I praise the four boys in particular in the centre that I did. Sloaney, the two Crouch boys, and Greenwood. The way that they threw their bodies in there and just either by skill or force won the clearances, and they were very, very good. And that, if they can maintain that sort of form, it's a powerful midfield.
I just think it was the way we weren't taking any crap shocked Geelong completely. We hunted them from the opening bounce and they just fumbled from them on. They just heard footsteps every time they got near the ball.
And to Texas' credit, even when he wasn't involved in the play, if after every bit of play, Texas there putting his face into their face and really being very intimidatory and... I think at the moment he's playing a good role as an intimidating captain.
Well, and those clearance stats, we had 14 to 10 centre clearances, but 33 to 17 stoppage clearances around the ground, and that's where we dominated. We did not allow them to get outside of the contest at any stage during the game, and we held our own in the centre clearances, and I felt overall our centre clearances were more effective than theirs, and the good thing was that when we did get clearances, we were kicking to a manned up forward line for a change.
Yeah, that's one of the structural changes that we did make. There were a couple of other structural changes as well, but which we'll go into later. But that in particular, I think, is such an important one against Geelong, and where we've blown the game completely before. And the other change, which was very obvious, was the fact that there was no bombing the ball to centre half forward. It was short kicking until you got into a situation that if you were going to kick long, it was going to go at least very close to the goal square. So that was another major change in the way we played.
It was particularly noticeable, Macca, that we took that extra kick before going inside 50. And it was noticeable from early when Rory Atkins had the ball a couple of times coming off half back, and he just refused to kick long. He made players come to him. Once it was Tommy Lynch and once I think it was Tex. He made those players come to him and just refused to kick long down the line. And it became obvious very quickly that we were going to move the ball by hand and by foot all the way up to centre half forward and then go inside 50. And it is exactly what we needed to do. And for the majority of the game, we pulled it off to a treat.
And it was Sauce, actually, not Tex. And we used Sauce a lot through the midfield as a marking target, which I thought was really interesting. And because Atkins was on the wing where I sit, and I'm watching him and I'm going, why is he looking in the middle? And he kept like fuffing around with it and he wouldn't get rid of it. And he kept looking in the middle. It was like, why is he doing that? Why is he doing that? And then as soon as he hit that target and then he did it again the next time, it's like, right, we're spreading that zone. And then I started watching Tex. And a few people have said that Tex had a crap game. Not if you were at the ground and watching our forwards absolutely spread that defence.
Correct, Nikki. That was the other thing I was going to say, that we really made the ground as big as we could and made it as wide as we could so that it was very difficult for them to defend. And your point's very valid, the one you just made.
So some individual stats, and we had Matty Crouch on 32 again, 14 kicks, 18 handballs. He had the four marks, the five tackles, three inside 50s, had 18 contested possessions, went at 65.5%. Disposal efficiency, had eight clearances. Just another really workmanlike, gritty performance from Matty Crouch.
Yeah, but you know, as you said last week, Phoenix, he's starting to get more time with the ball, isn't he? He doesn't look like he's... I mean, obviously he gets occasions where he's under pressure and he has to get rid of it very quickly, but when he's getting it in actual field play, he's just got that little bit of extra time and therefore his disposal is getting better and better. And you know, he's going right up... where he sits amongst the midfielders at the moment is starting to be pretty high, in my opinion.
The few people have been talking up today about Tom Mitchell from Hawthorn because he's having all these high possession games, etc. And they're saying, oh, he's a Brownlow smoky. I actually wonder whether Matty Crouch might be now, if you think about it, that such high possessions he's getting, and I think they're actually, his are a lot more valuable than Mitchell's because he's actually being a lot more proactive and he actually gets a lot more metres gained than what Mitchell does.
Correct. And he's going to be using the ball a lot better.
Have we lost Phoenix again?
No, I'm here.
You're just listening.
Yep, just listening. Look, I think, Matt, you're certainly right, Macca. Matt does have far more time with the ball. He seems far more composed, and he's far more willing to use the ball by foot, and some of his foot passing is becoming very creative. He's just gone from strength to strength this year. Brady Crouch had 29, 14 and 15, so a good ratio there. 3 marks, 7 tackles. I think that's equal team high tackles. Yep, 7 tackles. 2 inside 50s. He had 14 contested posies. Disposal efficiency a bit down, only 51%, but had 10 clearances. He just continues to build, Brady Crouch, over the last month or so.
Yeah, he's been on the rise now for about 4 or 5 weeks, and a very bull-like game. He charged in there, and he loves the tough stuff, does Brad? And you know, even though he's got a busted cheekbone, he still played out the last quarter. And you know, I'm just hoping they can patch him up and then he can still play next week, because I still would expect him to perform even if that was the case.
I thought that was very interesting, the way that Pike kind of highlighted that he played out with a cheekbone. I wonder whether that was a nice little backward swipe against Scott and his whole Dangerfield is a legend, because of how Danger played, because he had a sore foot. It's like, well, this is a guy who actually had a busted cheekbone and still kept putting his head over the ball and didn't care. But I think my favourite moment was when, even though he did give away a free kick for it, when he's roughing up Diverfield over the boundary line, the look on Brad's face was like he just wanted to kill him.
Yeah, I know the one you're talking about.
And Danger was just like, I don't know what to do with this.
Danger certainly was surprised by the intensity, I think. There was a change in mood. I think that's the first time Geelong has played us where we've been that intense. And, it showed, I think, in the demeanour of Paddy. I think it's the first time he's really been taken aback by being challenged physically as much as we challenged him on Friday night.
Yeah. I haven't seen him challenged by any other team as much as that. In fact, we were gang tackling him a lot of times, and we were trying to hurt him when we tackled him too. I don't mean illegitimately, but really getting stuck into him and throwing him down hard on the ground. To his credit, he keeps going, does Paddy, but he certainly didn't have a massive influence on the game.
Remember what we were talking about protecting the exit of the stoppage, Macca? Because yeah, that's exactly what the Crouch boys did.
Yeah, that's 100% exactly what they did. And I mean, a lot of Patrick Dangerfield's had 17 handballs, 8 kicks and 17 handballs. And a lot of those handballs were bugger all handballs. They were just to get rid of the ball.
Because he didn't want to kick it.
Exactly right.
He never got a chance to kick it.
Oh, no, even so, there's a couple of times, Macca, he had that chance to kick it where he would have normally accelerated away to turn. No, didn't want to do it. If he actually had to kick it a distance, so I think he only did one really long kick. Everything else was short.
Yeah, well, he had a couple of opportunities to have shots for goal and he just didn't take them, and it's very unlike him. Yeah. Rory Sloan, I thought, when the game was there to be won, was our best player. It was great to see him back to his best and great to see him back himself in and just actually beeline the ball, which is essentially how he played. He didn't worry about who was tagging him or who was on his back. He just straight lined the contest all night. 28 touches, 18 kicks, 10 handballs, 3 marks, 3 goals, 2 if you don't mind, 7 tackles, 5 inside 50s, got 6 frees as well, which was handy, 15 contested possessions, and 7 clearances with 3 rebound 50s as well. Just a complete game from Rory Sloan.
Yeah, it really wasn't it? And this is what we've been waiting for, him to fight back. I mean, don't take this shit that they've been putting on you. Fight back, mate, and show them how good you really are. And that's exactly what he did. And I really hope that this is a start that Sloaney dishes out to the tags every week from now on because he's good enough to do it.
I just loved his tackles. So just the intent that we have seen from him from the very first game he started, and I remember Dermot Brereton was just so impressed with his first game, and he hardly had any kicks. And he's, I think he only had like 7 kicks or something, and Dermot's comment was, "This is the best seven kick game you're ever going to see, like debut from a player, because it was his tackling and his intensity that he was just so impressed with, and to see that back once again, and because he was doing that." It meant the freeze was so much more obvious. You couldn't try and hold him away for the contest because he was that first for the ball.
Yeah, he worked his ass off. And that's the only way to do it when you're being tagged like that. If you really want to have an influence on the game, you have to go that little bit extra and you have to push and take a little bit of bruising and knocks. But you're going to get those anyhow when you're being tagged. And I just thought Rory was terrific.
The best thing I liked about Rory was that he looked like he was enjoying it. I don't reckon Rory has enjoyed a game of football for quite some time, but he was loving it out there. He was loving the hard and tough stuff. He was really enjoying playing for the first time in quite some time. And that, to me, was the most pleasing out of it, you know, apart from his obvious good form. That was most pleasing to see.
Good point. Very good point, Finney, because he did look like he was enjoying himself.
Now, the next bloke, Hugh Greenwood, is now a bona fide midfielder. 13 kicks, 10 handballs, 23 disposals, a couple of marks, kick one goal, 2, 4 tackles, 2 inside 50s. He had 10 contested possessions. 8 clearances, if you don't mind, 3 1-percenters, is 1 rebound, 50. He only had 71% time on ground. He is now an integral part of our team.
Oh, talk about a bloke that loves the rough stuff. You know, you reckon that Rory was enjoying himself. Hugh was absolutely loving it. And a number of times I've seen him smiling out there when the game was really tough. And I just love his attitude to the game. This guy is a real, real asset. And He's only going to get better and better, isn't he?
You know what really pisses me off was that in all of the shows today, the Sunday shows, where they've gone to discuss and show the highlights package from our game, not one of them had Greenwood's goal in it.
Which was a classic goal, really.
He flushed that, and it was his wrong foot.
Yeah, he did flush it. It spun the right way, did everything right. It was spot on. And, you know, I mean, let's not get into media coverage because that annoys me. Richie Douglas, had a really good game, particularly early when the game was there to be won. 11 kicks, 9 handballs for the 20 disposals, 4 goals, 5 tackles, 2 inside 50s. He had 7 contested possessions, won 80%. And 3 clearances as well. And I thought, particularly in the first half, Richie probably hasn't played that well for quite some time.
No, I thought it was a top game. When you take you know, Richie these days is a second banana. He's not the top banana. He's a second banana. And I thought he played a terrific game for that level of player. Put him up amongst the big boys with his effort. To get 4 goals in a tough game like that, that's a good game.
Well, he had to basically play Knight's forward role because Knight was being used to tag Selwood. And his job was to make sure that extra man in defence for Geelong was always manned up. And because he was doing that and they were getting near the ball, that was bringing him closer to the ball in the forward line and was able to pounce.
All credit to Douglas because he cops a bit of flack at times, but I just thought he played a mighty game.
That was definitely a good return to form for Dougie. Now, the next bloke, I'm going to read his stats and you're going to think, what a shit game. I'm not going to tell you who it is. 5 kicks, 4 handballs for 9 disposals, 1 mark, 6 tackles, 4 contested possessions, won at 33% disposal efficiency, had 8 clangers. 1 mark inside 50 and 3 rebound 50, and yet I thought he was one of our better players.
And an
come on down, Riley Knight.
And an eye gouge to good to boot, yes.
Yeah, and an eye gouge as well.
Yeah, no, Riley Knight, they said that he's as tough as a cat's head, and he really is. And you can knock him down, you can do whatever you like to him, and he gets up again. And I thought he did a very good job. I think he really was bugging the shit out of Joel Silver. And, no, good game.
And he wasn't doing it illegally. That was the thing.
Because
he's quick enough, he just has that pressure that he can put on and run with him. And this is why I don't like stats, and everybody who goes on about the stats so much is because what you just read out, Phoenix, anybody look at that and go, that guy was the worst player on the ground for your team, and we're all going, nah, he's one of our best.
You know, I liked his game. The one thing about his game, which was consistent with the rest of it, we were the hunter this time rather than being the hunted. Normally Geelong hunt us, and we're the quarry. But this time we had them on the back foot. They were the hunted.
I just have to remind you, Nikki, that this whole show is built on stats. So don't start bagging stats, because otherwise we're dead in the water.
No. But we then expound on those stats to how it actually fits within the context of the game.
Correct. Speaking of context of the game, I thought Rory Atkins did a little better, particularly early, sort of faded in and out as he does. Not his kind of game, but I felt like he was good with ball in hand. He had 11 and 8 for 19. He had took 5 marks, 5 tackles, which is a good stat, 2 inside 50s, when at 68%, only the 6 contested posses. But I felt particularly, again, early on, he was very constructive with his foot skills and really set the tone in terms of how we wanted to move the ball.
Yeah, look, I was very critical of him last week and said that the type of game he played last week could lose you a game. And although he's not a very physical player, he was much, much better this week. And I didn't see any squibbing or ducking or not going in when he should have gone in. I thought at least he did what he had to do. And when he, as you said, when he's got the ball in hand, he's very constructive. And some of his stuff was a little bit ambitious, but some of it was excellent.
Well, what I love was that he was encouraged to be ambitious, and our whole team was encouraged to take them on with those type of kicks. And him and D-Mac both were sitting out wide and purposely staying out wide, which really, and once we did that switch, it just spread.
Yeah, well, that was
zone.
That was another one of those structural changes that we made. I thought the coaching panel did a mighty job the way that they structured up.
Yeah, having those two outliers, and we've identified that over the last couple of weeks, haven't we?
Yeah.
It allows us to switch quicker, whereas Geelong's, you know, 18-man zone has to sort of roll across. And they tended to leave that outlier on his own until the ball was on that side of the ground. It allowed us to move the ball a little bit more, but better than that, we were then cutting back into the midfield with those diagonal kicks that have been missing, and that allowed us just to get through them. I just felt like our ball movement was extremely aggressive and confident, and it's amazing how different the game looks when you move the ball differently in that sort of circumstance.
Yep. Now, just on that being able to switch a lot quicker, one thing I've kind of thought about our team is we actually have a lot of long kicks in our team, probably more than many other teams. We've got players who can actually kick quite a distance. Do you think that's actually helping with that switch as well, because we have quite a number of players? It doesn't matter. So for other teams, they have to get the ball in particular players' hands to try for long kicks like this, whereas most of our backline can all kick long.
Yeah, I don't think it was a factor in this side, Nick. This is more of a structural situation that to have the outliers are out there, and as Phoenix said, they sort of almost unnoticed at times, and it gives them the opportunity to tend to bring the ball back inside. So I know what you're saying about getting the ball to them, but I think I thought our back line played pretty well all night, and some of them were belong kicks and others were just working your way there.
And speaking of long kicks, Brodie Smith, I thought, had a pretty good game too. He had the 17 touches, 16 kicks, one handball, took 7 marks, some of them really good, 3 tackles, 3 inside 50s. He had 7 contested possessions, went at 76.5%, 3 rebound 50s. I thought for once, Brodie really, well, not for once, but, you know, better than in the last few games against Geelong, he really stood up and asserted himself, and he was a key part of our win.
Yeah, and both Smith and Laird, their games in terms of stats might have been down a little bit because of the fact that they had to play a much more conventional type of backman's game, whereas, you know, we often have one loose, but we didn't have that against Geelong, and therefore they had an opponent, and therefore they had to be responsible for that. And I thought, while their stats were down, both of them played well.
Just on that goal that he missed, I'm going to blame that partly on Eddie and partly on Smithers, because he was just that little bit too close to Eddie when he got the handball, which made him – Eddie seemed to draw him too close, which meant that the opposition player was there.
I thought Eddie should have had a shot, though.
Yeah, I thought that was poor from Ed.
Yeah.
He's a paid forward, and, yeah, it was at the edge of his distance, but he could have – I've seen him kick goals from there before.
Yeah, he can kick goals from there. The ones where he was on the 50, not a problem with him passing those off, because that is not his distance.
No, but when it's 40 to 45, he's got to have a crack.
Yep, I agree. And someone's got to get into his ear, I think, because the one thing that's going to get Eddie back into a bit of form is hitting the scoreboard. And it's all very well and good to pass it around, but when it actually costs you goals, that's when it starts to become problematic. And I just want to see Eddie take those shots. Look, I thought our back six in general was pretty good. Jake Kelly, I thought, had a really good game, had the 12 posies, the 7 marks. I thought Andy Otten was probably the most susceptible, got exposed a couple of times by Harry Taylor. Lukey Brown was excellent with 11 disposals, 7 marks.
And a goal.
Pivotal goal, yep. Tiles, I thought, did an excellent job on Hawkins.
Hawkins hates him.
And Alex Keith had a very, very good first game, I thought.
A couple of when he was isolated a couple of times there, the Geelong bloke, what's his name?
Taylor.
Yeah, he got exposed a couple of times there because the way the ball was brought in and it was one-on-one and playing his first game, I thought that was a bit hard on him. But take those couple of goals that he got Taylor got on him under those circumstances. When it was played, when he was being the second tall rather than the first tall, I thought that he played very, very well, actually, for a guy playing his first game. And he showed a lot of promise, and I think he will be playing in our Guernsey a lot next year.
I think you're actually, you need to go and have a look again, Macca, because he only got outmarked by Harry Taylor once, and he actually outmarked Harry Taylor a couple of times.
Yep.
And did also a couple of key things in that last quarter. There was a tackle on Motlop, that I recall, and there was another key moment that he was pivotal in as well. Harry Taylor got a couple of his goals on Andy Otten, to be honest, and there was only, and the other one was when was the danger flop free where it got turned over and everyone was out of position.
Fair enough. I thought there was two, but I could well be wrong, but overall I praised him for his game in the sense that I thought that he showed enough to say that next year he'll be in the Guernsey quite a lot.
That corralling of Motlop that he did, you could just kind of see that Motlop thought, oh, here comes this big bloke, I'm going to be able to run around him, and then it was, oh, shit, I can't.
He is actually quick.
He is quick, he is agile, and he's a bit awkward when he tries to turn. It just looks a little bit awkward. But he's got some really nice tricks up his sleeve. But what I loved best was watching him play in front.
As you said, he's got good pace for a big guy, and he's got a nice kick on him, and then he's got pretty good hands. And to me, as I said, I can see he's got a good future.
Well, without digging into Tuesday Night Live, if Jakey Lever's ready to go next week, I don't think Alex Keith is an automatic out. I'd be looking very seriously at whether Andy Otten comes out and we maintain our two tools in defence.
Yeah, that could be very, that'll be interesting. But I think that also may depend on what's going to happen with Collingwood and Moore.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, I think Nicky's got a good point there.
Speaking of forward lines, our forward line was strangely unproductive, although quite workmanlike in the way they went about it, not big output numbers, but I didn't feel like they were getting towed up. I just felt like it was that kind of game that we were getting our goals differently than what we normally did. Jenkins had 13 and 6 marks. Walker had 12 with 5 marks. Mitch McGovern had 9 with 3 marks. I felt like they all played their roles. Eddie had 8 with 4 marks. And Tommy Lynch was probably the best of them, going up and down that flank with 19, 12 kicks, 7 handballs and 7 marks. I just felt like it was a product of our different ball movement that had them not playing such a key role on the scoreboard as usual.
Yeah, well, two things. I thought the fact that it was a 6-man forward line with a 6-man defence, and the fact that the game, as you said previously, was basically played between the two half forward lines, which meant that there was a lot of players cluttered up in that particular area, and therefore, rather than having the open spaces or running, kicking over the top of players and running onto the ball, that wasn't available. So the forwards had to earn whatever possessions that they got, and they more than held their own. And it just turned out that a lot of the goals came from midfielders, etc. So, but it was because, I really think it was because of the cluttering up between the two half forward lines.
We were also pushing up a lot higher and maintaining being high to counter that extra defender that Geelong try and get back there. So that was part of it. There was also a lot of us very much spreading the zone out wide to try and get that bit wide. And if they did manage to drop one back, then that free player didn't quite know where to go because we were spreading so hard, and we have so many different marking targets down there that it was making it ineffective. So they were doing a lot of work off the ball, which I know a lot of people hate, is this the lovely non-statistical role, but that was integral to how we won that game.
I think the other thing too, Nicky, in regards to how our forward line played, because Geelong did try to get Henderson as a spare on occasions, but what was happening is when we were going in long into our forward lines, we were going in far deeper, so there was goal line pressure on that spare, and there would tended to be a couple of Crows players there to contest the mark, and I think our first... not JJ's goal. The one that came out of that slick passage of handballs was off a kick that came in long. But because it was in the forward pocket, there was pressure. Whereas in the past, when we've kicked long into our forward 50, it's ended up 35 metres out. And they've been able to rebound very quickly and get us on the turnover.
Correct. Absolutely correct. And in fact, because when we were going into in deep, we're going really deep. I reckon about 3 times they dropped gimme marks, and I reckon at least one of them I can remember leading to a goal, if not 2.
I think one of the funniest things I actually saw was Lonergan, who was on McGovern, and it was in the Geelong forward line, and he decided he was going to... I started to see him actually lead into the forward line, and I'm like, why would you bring McGovern into that area? And sure enough, Gov just sat off that little bit. They kicked towards him. He just floated in front and took the mark. It was like, you idiot. Do you not know who you're standing?
Yeah, I felt Gov was a little bit rusty. His timing was a little bit out with his leaps, although he took that one nice mark, couldn't convert. But there's a few people on the big footy board that are ready to throw the baby out with the bathwater on Mitch McGovern.
Oh, hell no.
It's only his second game back from a long time out, and we know what he can do. So he just adds another dimension to the forward line. And considering, you know, we had him two games back, we had JJ, who was obviously struggling, looked like he was sweating like he was back up in Darwin during the game. He was obviously still under the effects of that food poisoning. I just felt like we've got more to give up forward. We didn't break the 100-point barrier against Geelong.
We had three shots we should have bloody kicked in that last quarter.
Well, we should have, but we didn't.
No.
And I just feel like we've got even more firepower. And whilst Dougie and Sloane combined for 7 goals, which is probably not going to happen too many times, I don't feel like that's a big issue because of the unusually low input from our forwards.
Yeah, and every game's played in a different manner. So the way this game was played wasn't favourable forwards kicking a lot of goals. And as I said before, you know, the midfielder types, they were the ones that benefited because the ball was there a lot of times in boundary throw-ins, etc. And we were very good at the clearances. But Mitch McGovern, he adds that he's the sixth dimension. And we've got six different players there.
Now, I think you've raised this before, Phoenix, that when McGovern plays, we don't lose.
Yep. That's, I think I did say that once before. Someone did anyway.
I thought it was you.
I'll take credit.
Yeah, I thought you'd like to take credit of that one.
What Phoenix means by that, if it's right, he'll take credit.
Very rarely wrong, Macca.
It really is. So that you did talk about that mark that JJ missed that then became the handball. Yeah, it did that get dropped and it was spilled and Geelong picked it up freely, but McGovern just came past and just put that little hand in to knock the ball loose. Just that pressure and his ability for closing speed, it's an intangible that is needed in our forward line.
He's an X factor, and, you know, you don't know what he's going to do next, whether it's going to be a mark or as you say, just a hand in there to poke the ball around, or whether he's going to do a left foot snap or whatever he's going to do. And
he needs to practice goal kicking, though.
Yes, well, they all do. They miss some that they should get, but... No, I love the mix we've got there, and I'd like to keep it all.
Yep. Look, at the end of the day, I think we can all agree that it was a combination of really good coaching by our coaching staff, putting the tag on Selwood, manning up in our forward line, and our ball movement coming from defence, and just probably about a 20% lift in intensity, particularly through the middle, which allowed us just to smash them in clearances. I think that was really the tail of the tape. Wouldn't you agree, both of you?
Yeah, big tick for the coaching staff there. Massive tick.
And I just think that, I know my dad actually said it to me about partway through the second quarter. He just looked at me and said, this should scare the rest of the AFL right now with the way we were playing.
Got to do it every week, though, Nikki.
Yeah, but we've got that ability to do it. We haven't seen us display that mongrel like that, which is very Sydney-like.
Yes, good point.
Well, and I think that's the key. We bailed out of the finals last year on the back of a couple of really insipid performances, one against West Coast just before the finals began, and then the infamous capitulation versus Sydney. And... you know, up until that point, we hadn't really been noted as a hard-at-it team. We were a free-flowing, running team that could move the ball very well and score heavily. But if one thing that the Geelong game on Friday night does indicate to the rest of the competition is that no longer can the Crows be called soft, no longer can we just be pushed off the ball. And I don't know what has changed from 6 weeks ago when we were struggling in that regard, but I suppose, you know, it's a long season that ebbs and flows, and if it means that we're building at the right time of the year, then that's great to see.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we've got to take that as a blueprint for the game, and that's how we've got to approach every game.
Yep.
Oh, thanks for that in-depth bloody comment, Nikki.
He made a good comment. I acknowledged it.
You're supposed to say, oh, you stole my line, Macco. Bloody, I was just about to say that, Macco. I just stole my line.
No, that's his line. I'm not going to steal his line.
Look, you copycats, just carry on.
Just one more. What do we think about Charlie Cameron?
Yeah, I was waiting for you to raise Charlie because I don't know where he's at the moment because he's a
midfield sometimes, wing sometimes, forward sometimes.
But he does little flash looking things now and again, but he's not doing a lot. And he is capable of some very, very miraculous type stuff when he's really on, but he's not at the level that we really like him to be at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I quite liked, there were a couple of things he did in the middle, which was nice regarding tackles, and then there was that great rundown one that he did when Selwood took the advantage and he just came in. Well, he came out of nowhere only for Geelong players. I think pretty much everybody else at the ground could see him beelining. It's that consistency. But I wonder a little bit because he only did a little bit in the midfield and a bit on the wing as a relief, but most of the time he was playing back down forward again. And the way we were playing up forward and the congestion didn't quite help him.
No, it obviously doesn't suit him, but and he probably needs the spaces. But I don't know whether it's a lack of confidence. You know, the fact that he's being put here, there, and everywhere rather than having a home, a place to play. I don't really know because six touches for a game is not a lot.
He's getting better at his goal kicking, so we can give him that one. He actually had a nice shot on goal. It's just that consistency and intent. He was better, as both PJ and American Crow was stating in the chat, I agree with that. He was better than he has been the past couple of weeks, but we just want a little bit more from him.
And I'm in agreement with what PJ's raised in the chat regarding Charlie's demeanour. He doesn't seem as, and PJ uses the word pumped, and that's probably a good word. He seems a little bit lacklustred. His shoulders seem a little bit slumped. He doesn't seem as up and about, I guess you'd say. And I just hope everything's all right with him on a personal level because what he's doing very well, but we're just not seeing enough of it. And I don't know, Macca, maybe it is a confidence thing or maybe it's something more, or maybe we're just jumping at shadows, but he doesn't seem the same vibrant player.
Is his intensity that he's playing at, because even though he's been in our system for a little while, he's still such a slight build, and the way he attacks ferociously, is he maybe getting a little bit tired? Do we need to possibly give him a rest?
I don't know, but his numbers are about half what they should be.
But when he does something, God, everybody takes notice.
Oh, it's exciting when he's on and when he does one of those. He's very mercurial. He's capable of doing anything and a variety of things. And as you say, he's very exciting when he's on. But you know, six times isn't really being on.
No, you just wonder whether. Eddie's downturn in form has actually rubbed off. I'm not sure.
As well. That might be a very good point, actually, because Eddie was mentally backing him all the way when he was going well. And, Eddie's at the moment not flying to as good as he was earlier. It could be a little bit in that.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point, Phoenix. I hadn't even thought of that, but he is... He idolises Eddie so much that could actually be quite a bit of a factor because Eddie brings him into the game and he's always trying to bring Eddie into the game.
Yeah, they do work in tandem, and I know that, you know, Eddie's been a solid mentor for Charlie, and you wonder whether Eddie himself is a little bit down because of his lack of output lately. I don't know. It's clutching at straws, maybe. But you know, it is noticeable. I think that he is a little bit down on confidence. You know, let's hope that he can break the shackles over the coming weeks. There's a couple of games coming up in which he's going to get some good opportunity, and let's hope that he can break the shackles coming into finals, because he's such a dangerous player when he's on fire.
Yep.
Now, that leaves us with the ladder, which I forgot to do earlier, so let's do it now. Noting the time is right on the hour, and I'm very, very proud of us. Crows on top with 13 wins. Next we have Geelong, and they're two, well, Geelong are, what's that, 6 points below us on 46. The Giants and the Tigers running out the top four, both with 44 points. Then we have the Power, the Swans, and the Demons on 40. The Bombers, the best of the 36-pointers, still in the eight, with West Coast and the Bulldogs and the Saints outside of the eight. And then down to the author also runs Hawthorn, Collingwood, Fremantle, Gold Coast, Carlton, Kangaroos, and Brisbane Lions. So, you know, with a game against Collingwood coming up this week, and, you know, you never want to underestimate anyone this year, but it's an opportunity for us to really skip clear.
It's also our last game at the G before finals. And we've been very lucky this year with the number of games we've actually had at the MCG. So that'll be good to put in practice some of the new structures that we've been implementing on the wider ground of the MCG. And I saw this on the board, and I can't remember who actually posted it, so apologies for not giving you credit. But I found it very interesting, as they said in this post, that 2 weeks ago we were second on the ladder. We're now 6 points clear in percentage. That's just how nuts this season is.
Yep, and the key to it is just to keep winning, as Phoenix was saying, and very important opportunity that we must not miss, and we must beat Collingwood, because we've got some tough games after that. And at the moment, we've got a 1.5 game break on Geelong, which is basically if we lost two more than them, they would go to they'd go past us. And with the other teams, though, we've actually got a 3 game break on them because of percentage. So they'd have to win. We could afford to lose probably, what's it, two or three. More than them before they catch us. So there's only, what, 5 to go, isn't it? And so, therefore, if we beat Collingwood with only 4 to go, we're starting to really tighten up our top 2 position.
Yep, absolutely. Next round, without going through them all, looks like a pretty much a steady-as-she-goes round. The top 8 play the bottom 8, basically. And barring upsets, you would expect that there wouldn't be a lot of movement on the table. And then the last 4 rounds really open the thing up. And you're right, Macca, I think 3 wins keeps us top. 2 wins probably even keeps us top 2. So we're in the box seat, and certainly looking good for a really good run at it this week.
Yep.
Sorry, this season.
Just as one question, though, I mean, Brad Crouch, if he doesn't play, that weakens the midfield, which is Collingwood's strength, of course.
I don't think it's that big a deal. Collingwood's strength is their midfield, but that doesn't make them the best midfield in the comp. I think they've got a couple of really good players through there. They're missing Pendlebury, obviously. Varko went down today. He may not play. I don't think it's a big deal. It's an opportunity, maybe, if we rest Crouchy, to bring in Gallucci for another run as insurance.
He didn't do too badly in the SNFL today.
And welcome to Josh Quinn, debuting on the chat. Thanks for listening, mate.
Left it right till the end. Well done.
That's right.
Better late than never.
That's right. And on that note, we've done very well. We're right on the hour and 5 minutes, which is a record for us. So without further ado, don't forget you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook at AFL Crowcast. Scorpus is very entertaining on Twitter.
And he's getting a bit fired up.
Well, we might actually get Selwood a couple of weeks with the tweets that we've been putting out today. Yeah, we've got Tuesday Night Live, obviously, coming at you on Tuesday night at 8:30 Adelaide time. In the meantime, the Crowbar Boys will be posting up their podcast sometime in the next 24 hours. That's always a good listen as well. Thanks very much, Macca and Nikki, for coming along.
No, pleasure.
You're welcome.
And we'll see you on Tuesday night. Good night, guys.
Good night, all.
See ya.